This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It is Thursday, the 16th of March, 2023, and today we talk all about the Mac and some cool apps.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Oh, hello, Sean Preece. How are you today?
I am gorgeous, thank you, Stephen Scott. I am feeling so out of place today, though. Let me just say that before we start.
Well, do you know, I was thinking you would feel that way, because we're going to talk about the Mac. And look, you have not given the Mac much love for a long time.
How dare you, sir? Mm. I was in love with the Mac for the longest time. I've just let it go.
You resemble that remark.
5 years ago, since I touched the Mac, probably, something like that. Yes, and it's all about the Mac. I know it's going to be a big Mac love fest today, so I'm feeling slightly out of it. But that's not the only reason.
Well, yes, we'll get to the other reason in just a second. You may hear the other reason in just a second when we introduce our guests today. But I am going to get you a Mac Mini. I've got an M1 Mac Mini just lying here. I actually have two, but let's just move on from that. We've got two, and one of them I want to give to you because I want to get you using it.
What, an M1? Where's the M2? Not to sound ungrateful.
Right, I see. Right, okay. So that is it.
No, that'd be cool. Actually, I would love to go back into the Mac. The one I've got is a 2012 Mac
Mini. Throw it out.
And it won't go to the latest OS.
No, exactly. The little robot behind the scenes at Apple. You know, in the store, the one that takes them all apart, it'll just throw it away.
Oh, yeah, what's he called? Yeah, Trevor or something like that. Yeah, he'll take it to bits and recycle the gold.
No, it won't. What it will do is it will just pick it up from you and it will just take it and throw it straight in the trash. That is what it will do.
Okay, fair enough. I'm not using it. I'm using it as a doorstop.
And then it'll hit its little empty recycle bin button. Do you know what's funny? I think it's called trash in America. This is funny, right? In America, on Mac OS, it's trash is the name of the bin.
It's called trash over here. I remember the trash in the dock.
It's trash, yes. It's called trash in America. Here it's called bin.
No, they changed that. I'm sure it used to be trash.
It still is called bin. It's so funny.
Well, the proper English way of saying it, yeah.
Exactly, that's right.
Just to alienate a lot of our listeners. Sorry about that.
Well, I must admit, we're teaching. I think it's educational.
Yeah.
That's what this show is. It's educational. Let's find out if that's true by bringing in people who know things. We've got Michael Babcock back with us again. Michael Babcock, always good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. And I messed my region settings up, so right now it calls mine a bin as well.
There you go, see?
I don't know how beautiful. I did it.
Was that weird? Did you think, wow, what's that?
It caught me off guard. It made me think, huh, that's probably why I have a UK accent on my Siri voice now.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because you find a lot of people abroad tend to have UK, or, you know, we always tend to go for an alternative. Like here, we have a lot of people here who use US voices.
Australian
voices. Karen. That's right. Yeah. All right. Calm down. Listen, we've also got with us, and this is a brand new voice to our show. You will know this guy's voice. I have to say, he probably has the best voice in the world. I thought Rob, who did our voiceovers, had the coolest voice. No. Then this guy comes along. Damasi Thomas is with us, who's Michael's co-host on the podcast, on one of the many podcasts he does. Yes. Damasi, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, listen to that.
Wow. Wow. Listen to me. Listen to us nasally whine away in our funny accents.
Right, Damasi, could you say hello to Sean? And Sean, could you respond?
Yeah. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Damasi. How are you? I can't do it. I'm trying.
That is so embarrassing, isn't it?
I know. You two have got the best voices I've ever heard. There, I've said it.
Who,
I've
Michael
got it out in the way. I'm
Damasi.
Not ashamed.
Yeah. But see, you have the great accents, though, right? And you have the proper English, too.
Oh, that's true. We do say bin. Yeah. Okay. Well done.
Some people have got the power in life. Some people have got the respect. And other people are just the funny people. I think we're the funny people, Sean.
Yeah, I know. They're just the cool kids. I mean, they just sound so cool. It's amazing. Welcome to the show.
Let's not fawn over you too much because this will just get a bit weird very quickly.
I wanted to do our jingles and voiceovers. It's amazing.
I know. Rob is quaking in his boots. Yeah, get rid of Rob. Rob's fired. Okay, look, we're going to talk today about the Mac and in particular two applications, although there's actually more we can get into today because Michael and I have been emailing back and forward. Or what I mean by that is Michael's been emailing me and I usually either send one-word responses or none.
Usually none.
Usually none, yeah. I am the world's worst emailer. If AI can do anything, it could maybe answer my emails. That would be cool. But
give Outlook enough time and it'll happen.
Well, it's getting there. It feels that way. But you've been emailing about a lot of different ideas and things to talk about. And that's why I thought we'd wrap it all into this today, because look, it's one conversation of many we will have and have had about the Mac over the years. And I don't want to get into the whole, you know, how cool is the Mac or where are we with the Mac, because I think we've done a lot of that. I think let's talk about practical applications. So one is Launch Bar. And I thought that's a good place to start because it's kind of the beginnings of where you would begin on a computer on a Mac, right? So it's an alternative to Spotlight. Now, Demasi, you've done a big demo of this on your new podcast, right?
Yep, on Technically Working, I kind of walked through when I got my M2 Air because I was trying to be like Steven. He convinced me to buy it, actually. I still
don't blame me.
Man, listen, so nobody knows you, but I'm like, this guy Steven is the one reason that I bought this M2 MacBook Air. It's kind of his fault.
I'm so throwing under the bus. Yeah.
Well, I mean, listen, man, they don't know you. And all you have to do is show up and throw on a very heavy Scottish brogue, and they're like, oh, it's James Bond. It's okay then.
Oh, thanks.
James Bond.
Yeah. Demasi Thomas.
Thank you. Oh, very
there
good.
You go. See, I like that. I can't do that.
This sounds like a lisp.
Or man, listen, you could pull out your amazing Sopranos accent. That also works very well.
Hey, everybody, I want a coffee. You got a coffee around here? And I'm just basically a dancing monkey now. Is that what I am? I'm just a
He's
toy.
Playing you like a puppet. It's amazing.
I feel like Ham out of Toy Story.
Hey, man, listen. I listened to the show just for that. But seriously.
I'm glad we educate you and help you on this.
Oh, yeah, man.
Well, in saying that, you did buy a computer out of it, so I suppose you got something out of it, or at least Apple did.
And it's actually like it's me going back to a laptop because I was on the Mac Mini for a while, and it's been great. But yeah, I started everything from scratch on this MacBook Air with the intent of recording content as I set up some of the more kind of general purpose applications like Launch Bar to record the process and show people my settings. Because here's the thing I often find. Somebody will tell you about this great app that they're using, like, oh, this app is so amazing, you know, blah, blah, blah. You go download it, and then you're like, well, mine isn't doing what you said yours does. How do I get there, right? Uh-huh. So recording the settings process of how I configure mine will help people get, you know, kind of a aspect of looking to why mine works this particular way, and also explaining the settings. So if you're checking a box or unchecking a box, you know why you're doing it.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. It's funny, I downloaded an app recently for the Mac called Vienna, which is an RSS app. And it's like you say, you know, actually, when you download it and you play around with the settings, there are a lot of things in there you could change that could make the experience better. But you have to explain that to people. Or like you say, they'll be thinking, well, hang on, mine doesn't work like that.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that explanation, Stephen. Still waiting.
Listen, it's on my list. I've got a list over here. There's a list lying around here somewhere. I don't know. It'll go get there. So this new podcast, is it available where you get good podcasts?
It's available everywhere you can get good podcasts.
And bad ones?
However you manage to get Double Tap and hear us right now, you can also search for Technically Working and get that show.
That is brilliant. Okay, well, we will check that. I definitely will check that out. But let's talk about Launch Bar. And Michael, you have helpfully explained a little bit of this to us just so we can get a bit more of a sense of what Launch Bar is and how we can use it.
So you guys asked to see some of our favorite applications. I don't really feel like showing you something that's not accessible right now, but I will show you something cool you can do with the Mac. Start out with Write Option S.
Safari, 11, Payone Media, LLC, YouTube.
And that takes me to my YouTube channel, and I'm using heading navigation to find...
Heading level 3, Technically Working clip by Payone Media, LLC 5 days ago, 26 seconds, 2 views.
And this is only 26 seconds, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to press VO space on it.
Complimentary, YouTube video player, group, pause.
I immediately tap the K key, which paused the video, and then I'll go to the address bar with Command L.
https://.
I don't think I have to do this, but I'm going to press Command A to select everything.
Select all.
And then I'm going to press and hold Command Space.
YouTube can watch URL.
This opens Launch Bar, and if I tap the Tab key.
Donny, application.
This is the other favorite application I have. Now, before I do that, I'm going to escape out of here and show you something real quick with Launch Bar.
Launch Bar, system dialog.
And I tap DOWN.
Downloads, folder, contains 23 items.
you'll see it contains 23 items. Tap the right arrow key.
Michael Blind Shell Classic 2 deleting books in part. MP3 audio.
And that's the last video, well, audio, that was downloaded that I'm turning into podcast content for the Shellphone Show. Tap the escape key. And now I know that the URL to the YouTube video is selected. Remember, press and hold Command Space.
YouTube.com watch URL.
Tap the tab key. Where do you want to send it?
Downey, application.
And I want to send it to Downey. Press enter.
Safari, 11, Technic, Downey, Downey window, downloads, dim collection has keyboard focus.
You'll hear a sound.
Download of technically working clip did begin.
VoiceOver tells you that the download of technically working clip did begin, and you don't have to do anything else, so you can tap Command Q.
Support,
and we're back
11,
where we
technically
start.
Working clip, YouTube, sir.
Now, remember, with Launch Bar, we can press Command Space.
Launch Bar, System Dialog.
Type D-O-W-N.
Downloads, folder, contains 24 items.
Wait a minute, 24. Tap the right arrow key.
Technically working clip, MP3 audio.
And there's the audio. Converted automatically and saved in my downloads folder. You can use other tools like Hazel, if anyone's interested, and organize these files automatically. You can also configure Downey to close when the conversion is complete.
So that's okay. Launch Bar, which is, okay, this is then essentially an alternative to Spotlight, but clearly much more capable.
Absolutely. I don't even use Spotlight. I don't even know how Spotlight works. I'm going to be honest. Like, somebody could probably teach me how Spotlight works. I've been using the Mac full time every day since about 2013. So about 10 years consistently on only Mac. And I don't think I've used Spotlight once. I know my computer. What? If I set up a new computer, I hit Command Space and Spotlight comes up. I'm like, oh, I have clearly not done something I should have done.
It's just too clunky. Like, Spotlight is clunky compared to Launch Bar is the best way to explain it. I tried not to use Launch Bar for a little while when I reformatted this Mac Mini that I'm on. And I think I lasted maybe a day, but Launch Bar is just super convenient. And I use Launch Bar a lot of times in replacement of Finder as well. I will use Finder, but a lot of times whenever I need to find anything, I'll just hit Command Space and either use the arrow keys to navigate or start typing what I'm looking for.
But that was what I was going to ask, and you've just explained it there in the demo and what you've just said is, you know, what's the difference between Spotlight? Because that's what most people are going to ask. Because when I think of Spotlight and what I thought Launch Bar was, you know, basically it's like hitting the Windows key on a PC and just type in, you know, Word or Edge or whatever and start in your program. But that integration of other apps like Downey, now, does that automatically populate? Does it scan what other software you've got on there and populate? Or do you have to do something to link that to Launch Bar?
No, it automatically indexes. So as you install new applications, they'll show up. So if I were to, you know, download, what was that app, Stephen, you mentioned, the Vienna, right? If I downloaded that and installed it, even before I run it, Launch Bar probably will have indexed it. So I could hit Command Space and type the first couple of letters of the app name and there would be Vienna. I could tap return and open it up or send things into it, as Michael was demonstrating in that clip there.
That's the thing for me, though. Yeah, I totally get, as Spotlight would do, right? You type the first few letters and whatever app you got comes up. But it's being able to pipe URLs or whatever else into another app. That is really cool. That's really powerful.
And you can also set up custom abbreviations. So I have I'm using a tool called Mistro, which is my Dropbox alternative, which at this time does allow me to keep my Dropbox folder on an external drive, just saying. And I have a folder in there called Stations. And in Stations, I have several PLS files, and I have the call letters on it. So on this side of the United States, our call letters start with K. So I have it set up so Launch Bar, I don't have to navigate to my external drive, then to Mistro, then to Stations. I set up a custom abbreviation. So if I type in the first two letters of a station, KDUK, for example, and I type KD, it automatically moves focus to that specific station. And then I can either hit enter and it'll open in VLC, or I can press tab and then down arrow to locate a different application that I want to put it in. So that ability to abbreviate things and set up your own custom abbreviations can save time. And then there's a clipboard manager, which is super powerful, built into Launch Bar as well.
Okay, so just to go back a little bit on this, because I guess what people might be wondering is, okay, so this seems very and clearly very fully featured. Is this an alternative to Finder as well? Can you navigate entirely without Finder?
You can. And as Mike said, like, I sometimes will do that, especially if I know exactly what I'm looking for. I know where it is, or I can get there. Or if I know beginning with the process of looking for a file or folder that I need to grab something and send it somewhere else, I will completely navigate inside of LaunchBar. There have been the early days of me using LaunchBar. I was doing a lot of reading in their forums and things like that. There are people who have actually gone through the extraneous steps of disabling Finder and they just use LaunchBar. I have not gone to that extreme. I don't think I ever would go to that extreme. But there are people that have done that as well.
Wow. I saw using in that demo there, the downloads and then right arrow in, was it, to the contents of that?
Yep.
But then what about copying and pasting, you know, moving files about? Surely you would still need Finder on the system. You wouldn't want
Nope. So let's take Michael's example there where he right arrowed into downloads and there was that technically working clip. He could have hit the tab key and that would have allowed him to, that puts him into send mode. And then he could have just typed in the letters of the folder that he was looking for and hit return. And you'll get, depending on how you configure your settings, by default, it'll give you options of whether you want to copy the file to this location or you want to move it. In the settings, you can configure it to always do one or the other, or I always leave mine set at the options because sometimes I want to move something, sometimes I want to copy it.
Why? And you can also use the keyboard shortcuts within LaunchBar. So when you highlighted the technically working clip, if I would have just pressed Command C, then I could have moved to a different location and then Command V'd it into that location and that would have copied it as well.
That's it. Finder's gone. Why use Finder? I hated Finder. Finder was terrible for me. That's so good.
And the thing is that I think some people might have thought initially, and certainly as we started this conversation, thinking, oh, here we go, this is all very advanced. But it isn't really. That's the thing about it's this, isn't not. It? It's actually quite a simple application in a lot of ways. It has a lot of depth to it. So you can take your time and really learn this to the fullest, really.
Yeah, and that's how I started. Like when I first started, and you know, maybe not the head off the emails you're going to get, Stephen. But you know, some people are going to like, well, Alfred is great. I tried Alfred, LaunchBar. Yeah. LaunchBar just felt like the right application for me, so it's the one I've stuck with, and I've periodically went back and tried Alfred over the years as they have added new features. Similarly with Spotlight, like whenever I have to wipe a Mac for some reason, you know, I'll try Spotlight a couple of times, but it very quickly doesn't fit the way that my brain is working. But with my initial beginnings with LaunchBar, like I was just using the bare basics of like, you know, Command Space and find the application and open it. It took me, you know, I was able to take my time and grow into some of the fancier tricks that it can do, running scripts, doing searches, things like that. So you can start where you're comfortable and, you know, move along as you want to, as you said.
And I was looking through LaunchBar, and I think what makes it as powerful or as not powerful as you want it to be is the actions. And I'm looking at some of these actions. So, for example, there's a empty trash action. There's an eject all drives action. There's an enter text, a flip image horizontal, and there's a get mail and compose mail to people. In the actions category indexing rule that I have, there's 138 different actions. And these are all things you can perform by just typing the beginning of them, and you can set up custom shortcuts to perform those actions as well.
Oh, that is incredible. I mean, Sean, come on. You're going to want to have a play with this
and get in one, aren't you? That's Microsoft Power Toys. That's nothing. No, that is fantastic. That sounds so good. Is this what's the price on this app?
$30 US.
And I'm guessing that's the default now. So whenever you get a Mac, that's the first thing you put on. Yeah, it's one of those programs. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that sounds so powerful.
It's 1Password and then LaunchBar, because 1Password has my license key in it.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds really good.
So, you know, taking it to the next step, because, you know, it's often the case whenever you start getting into something like this, you end up playing around with other options as well and other applications. You mentioned Hazel. What is Hazel? What does it do?
Hazel basically will watch, you can set it up to watch a folder and then perform actions when certain criteria are met. Now that's sounds very convoluted in advance. Basically, let's say with your downloads folder, you can have Hazel watch your folder, your downloads folder, and anything older than 2 weeks, just throw it in the trash, right? Because if you haven't dealt with it in 2 weeks, you're probably not going to get to it. At least if you're me, you're probably not going to get to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, or in your bin, right? Let's use the proper terminology for it. Let's, you know, you can have Hazel toss that in the bin for you.
Thank you.
You can also have Hazel reorganize files. So when we're working on technically working, we try to have a similar file naming structure for those files. So whenever a file is downloaded to my downloads that includes technically working and is an MP3 file and came from alphonic.com, because you can choose where you want, like if you want it to watch URLs, then move that to the Dropbox folder for technically working automatically, so I don't have to do it. And it's all automated.
These things are just so powerful. And I think these are the things that people don't realize do actually exist and can make such a difference to your workflow. I mean, just monitoring a folder and when something comes in, automatically doing it. I mean, it can save you so much time, right? It's so much time.
And it makes you look more sophisticated and on top of things than what you really are. Because I was dropping the ball for a while, you know, recording voiceover work and then putting in the client's folder and then not emailing them, so not telling them. So now I have it set up so it'll automatically move the files to the client's folder. There's another tool called Keyboard Maestro, which will automate tasks, and that'll send an email to let the client know. And then I don't have to worry about it. I just do the work, and then none of the follow-up is necessary. There is an equivalent tool to Hazel on Windows. Unfortunately, the last time I tried it, it was fully inaccessible, but it's called File Juggler is the recommended tool for Hazel on Windows.
Yeah, and it's not like, let's be honest, it's not like there's any winner out of these two. It's not that you could say, well, Mac or Windows is best for these. It's, individual applications can be useful. Well, you know, in the sense that, you know, you could look at a lot of applications on the Mac that are pretty inaccessible, and you can find similar on the Windows side. So it's not really a Mac versus Windows thing in terms of the productivity. There's probably equivalent options out there on Windows. And to be honest, File Explorer, as I'm trying to say, is okay. I mean, it's getting a bit more convoluted these days, you know, but for basic navigation, it's fine.
I prefer it to find it, yeah. I do find that...
definitely.
It's surprising, though. I do find, given that Apple's, you know, security and gatekeeper and all that on the Mac system, I do find a lot more of these, I'm going to say, funky little apps out there. And I always look for alternatives. These are the things that really do want me to go back to the Mac. Things like Hazel and that. And I have looked for alternatives. Loopback is a perfect example, right?
The app
Rogue Amoeba on the Mac. Trying to find something similar on Windows is virtually impossible. Virtual audio cables, it's not the same at all. So there's lots of these little things on the Mac. I just find it quite surprising that the Mac just does seem to, I don't know, culture these sort of things, given how clamped down the system usually is.
Yeah, and typically what happens, like with Hazel, for example, you know, if you wanted to be able to watch any folder, you're going to have to go in and give it, you know, full disk access. Launch Bar, there's a lot of permissions to step through when you first set it up, you know, depending on what you wanted to have access to and how you want to use it. So there's a lot more of that now than there used to be on Mac OS. But Apple, for the most part, has been pretty good about setting up ways to continue to use these type of applications. Just by making sure that you give it the appropriate permissions to allow it to do what it needs to do for things that come in from outside of the App Store. I am still super annoyed at the process we have to go through for Rogue Amoeba's apps to get those working. I feel like Apple could do a little bit better in that area. Because having to reboot into recovery and do all of this stuff, and then they make it seem so super scary, like, oh, you're going to lower your security policy. It's like, well, it's kind of where it's always been, but... it's a lot of steps now for something like Rogue Amoeba, and I do feel like they could do a little bit better in that space. But I'm happy that these apps still exist.
Although at least you can get in there and use it with... Okay, granted,
this is true.
Is it Fred? Yeah, it's Fred.
It's Fred.
You can get into recovery and access everything until you have to activate a Mac because you had to erase it. And the Wi-Fi menu bar on that screen is not accessible with VoiceOver. So you have to connect it to an Ethernet cable or use a mouse to have someone click on that Wi-Fi menu. And that was frustrating when I encountered it at 6 o'clock in the morning on Saturday.
Well, the good thing is it's not bothered you that you had to bring it up on a show.
That's right.
That's good.
You got over it.
Exactly. You got over it and you've not thought about it since. That's
Ira.
Good. Yes.
But Ira can't help, and no. Especially when you have a Mac Mini and no mouse connected.
Yeah, that's right. Oof,
yeah.
And let's not even get into the whole headless Mac thing, because I know you've got into that as well. Mouseless and headless, it sounds
like. See, that's how I'm running mine. So, like, I would really be in... and here's one of those situations, like, and you guys, the two of you, are very good at pointing out different alternatives or bringing up aspects that some of us don't always think about. I never encountered that problem when resetting a Mac, a Apple Silicon Mac, because I always have an Ethernet cable connected. Mm-hmm. So I never encountered it until I was helping somebody else over the phone reset a Mac, and I was like, oh, it really appears that you can't get to that Wi-Fi menu. I am sorry, because now I got you in a state that you can't get out of.
Yes, I know. It makes you feel so guilty, right?
It does.
Listen, stick around. We're going to talk about Backblaze, another interesting app on the Mac, and also Rim, because this is very interesting. It's now available for the Mac, or at least I think it's coming in up for the Mac now. So you'll be able to access other computers, either on your own network or support other people as well. RIM being Remote Incident Manager. We'll talk about that next. This is Double Tap.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. This is Double Tap. Now, back to the show.
And back with Damasi and Michael today, and Sean as well. Oh, yeah,
hello.
Sean. I remember him.
I'm here.
Hello.
Hello,
Sean. Yes, we sound like that today.
Oh, hello.
Especially on today's show, yeah. I sound like Mrs. Doubtfire all of a sudden. I don't know what's going on here.
You always do to me.
Thanks. Apparently, he was Scottish in that movie. People thought he was English, but he was Scottish in that movie because he had filmed in Scotland on a different movie just before he did Mrs. Doubtfire. And that's where the whole thing came from. Apparently, that's the
beautiful rumor. Beautiful story.
Isn't
Thank
it?
You.
There yeah. you go. I tell you, this is an educational show.
It's a tech show, honestly.
You get to the end of it and you say, that taught me a lesson.
Hey! Yeah.
Right, so let's talk about other apps on the Mac. I want to talk about RIM, Remote Incident Manager. Now, I have to say, the name is pretty terrifying. It just feels like, I don't know, it feels like something kind of nuclear blast technology
or
something.
Worst name in the world.
Okay. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, I have to dial into a submarine and turn off the nuclear before it gets to zero, you know? But it's not that, is it? Just to be clear, it's not that, no. It's totally
that's exactly what it is.
I mean, maybe if they have a Mac or Windows computer on the submarine, you can remote connect to
it. And they don't have to run the screen reader on that computer either.
Exactly.
How irritating would that be, getting stuck in recovery mode in that situation?
Please someone tell us what RIM actually does rather than Stevens.
Yes.
So RIM is a fully accessible remote incident manager, is what IRM stands for, and it allows you as a controller to control a remote computer, now either Mac or Windows. Now, let me preface this by saying RIM is only currently available in beta, so general public cannot get it at this time. It is expected to be released in a couple of months, and from the very early beta days, I'm kind of super excited about this. I've been looking for a tool that would allow me to control other Macs, or what's even more important about RIM, control Windows computers without screen readers. So I work for an organization sometimes where all of the, they support blind individuals, but none of the staff is blind, which I think is kind of interesting. Well, no, I take that back. They have one blind staff member now.
Yay!
But none of them use screen readers. The blind staff member, she uses Zoom text, I believe. And so, whenever they call me, they're like, how do I fix this? I'm like, oh, it's down by the clock, which should be down by your lower right-hand corner or left-hand corner. Or I don't remember because I don't look at it every day. But look in the lower corner and see where the clock is. Or use this key. Oh, you don't understand what I mean when I say press Windows key B to get down to the taskbar or to the toolbar down there. So I'm super excited about RIM because it'll allow me as a completely blind IT person to remote into someone else's computer, whether they have a screen reader or not, and I don't have to, here's the big D word, disclose if I am blind or not while I am doing the remote access to the computer.
So cool. So cool. Mm. Because it's harder than you think, right? I thought this problem was solved when Quick Assist came to Windows. Built-in remote assistance, very easy, accessible, perfect. Doesn't stream audio across. So you couldn't start a narrator on the remote computer and listen in. You couldn't do it that way. So that was out. And then they totally ruined it by making it a Windows Store, but only in Windows 11. And you had to, so terrible. TeamViewer, inaccessible. Is it still? I haven't used it in the longest time, but you couldn't get the details from it every time I tried to use that one. Of course, we do have the Tandem with Jaws, which is excellent. And you also have NVDA Remote as well, which is an add-on for NVDA, which can do the same thing. But some of those, well, Tandem doesn't, but NVDA, sometimes you'll need to muck around with the port forwarding on routers. And who's going to do that? Nobody. So this sounds like the perfect solution, especially with having a screen reader built in. And it's not actually running on the remote computer, is it? So they're not hearing what you're hearing.
Correct. Right. If they don't have a screen reader, they don't hear what you are hearing. You just hear that. And one of the cool things, especially in a training environment, is you can flip the session. So if Demasi and I are trying to do something and I'm like, that's not looking the way I should, can you take a look at my computer and let me know what's going on? I can flip the session. So then he's controlling my computer and he can see what I'm seeing on my screen as well.
Hang on. So he's watching you watching them. Is that what you're saying?
Inception. So we did a test with this the other day, and so Michael connected to my computer. He sent me a little code or whatever, and then he was able to control my computer, and then we just flipped the session around so that now I was then from my computer controlling his computer. And let me just say here, like, one of the super cool things about this has never been a problem that was ever solved on the Mac, to my knowledge. Like, I have never, from the time I started, that's one of the things I did miss, truly miss about switching away from Windows when I did, is Tandem is a thing that existed. The NVDA remote access came out shortly after I switched away from the Mac, away from Windows, which really kind of, I was just kind of eyeballing Windows like, oh man, did I leave at the wrong time? Because this is not a thing that works on the Mac, and you would think, and I'm still, you know, not that I'm bitter about it at all, Apple, that, you know, we have several blind people who are, certified professional support people for Apple. But, you know, we can't remote into anybody's computer and do anything. I mean, it's OK, though. It's all right. We got iMessage apps. Like, we got an app store and iMessages. So, you know, we're good, right?
Bitter either. Is this the bitter day? Is this the bitter show today?
Not bitter. Well, you know what I'm really trying to do is bring a little bit of I'm trying to channel Sean just a little bit to not make this a whole Apple love fest. So let's tell the truth about Apple. Like, they're great, but they also make some mistakes, and they also drop the ball on a lot of things. So I want to make sure we give them a level playing field here.
Completely agree with that. And I think we need to know about the solutions that are coming, if there are any, and certainly highlight the ones that aren't, because there are plenty of areas where Apple could improve, as we know, especially on the Mac. But this is a really interesting one. So let me just get this in my head. So if Sean and I wanted to, I'm thinking about you, what you said earlier, Michael, about if you connect to someone who doesn't have a screen reader, you're able to connect. So you're on the Mac, right? Let's just say this. Yep. You're on the Mac right now, and you connect to someone on Windows. You're going to use NVDA to be able to control that computer, unbeknown to the person you're connecting to. You're just fixing their computer, right?
Yep.
And if you connect on a Mac, you're using VoiceOver.
Yep.
Okay. How are you controlling their system, and how is that working with the keyboard? Like, when you're in the window for RIM, are you just in that window and therefore it doesn't...
Yeah.
Like you're using Parallels, right? You're just controlling another system.
Yep. So there is a keystroke, and I'm not going to mention it because as it being in beta, it could change between now and when it's released. But there is a keystroke so when you connect to a computer, you're in that computer. Alt-tab will alt-tab through things. You can press Option-tab, Command-tab, whatever you want, and you're not going to see your Mac. You're not going to accidentally do what you do sometimes in Parallels, where you switch from Windows over to the Mac because you hit the wrong keystroke because you forgot that happens. Yes, I've been there. But there is a keystroke with RIM that you can press that will activate the RIM menu. And then when you do that, there's an option there that says minimize remote session. And when you choose that, then that will put you back on your Mac, and then you can switch back over to the RIM app and you can do research or, you know, do what you need to do on your Mac and then switch over to the RIM application. And then I believe it's restore a remote session, and then you're back in the remote computer. So there are ways to switch back and forth, but your keystrokes when you're in RIM remotely connected to it, is my understanding, are those keystrokes are then processed by the remote operating system that you're connected to.
Okay, so two other questions I have on this. One is, when you're connected to someone who has a screen reader turned on, do they hear what you're doing? So does Damasi hear what you're doing?
Yes.
And vice versa.
Also then you hear their screen reader as your audio, as you're navigating or controlling their computer as well. So when I connected to Michael's computer, you know, I didn't hear the voice that I use on Mac OS. I heard the voice that he uses on Mac OS, which is different.
Ah, interesting. Right, okay. And in regard, I'm thinking about people who, like me, for example, I've got a Lenovo laptop, my PC sitting on the desk, which I use every day. And I decided to just focus in on having that because, you know, I can use it on the move. If I want to control that from my Mac, I could just do that, right? I'd be able to just run that from my... From using this software, I'd be able to do that.
You don't quite believe it, do you, Stephen?
It's more the, you know, that way. I've had this experience with Parallels, which kind of feels like the same issue that I think a lot of us have had over the years with the attempts at this kind of software using screen readers anyway, where you end up getting lost within two systems.
Yeah.
And that's one of the, I think, important things to note with RIM is, one, RIM has been around for a long time on Windows. I used it, you know, years ago when I was doing Windows support and teaching on JAWS and NVDA and Cerotech's screen reader, which I can't recall the name of at the moment. So it's been around for a while for Windows. So they've conquered a lot of those connectivity issues. And as Michael said, when you remote connect to a computer with RIM, you're kind of locked in until you intentionally go through a process of pressing a keyboard shortcut to bring up a menu to get out of that connection. So once you're connected to a remote computer, you're stuck in using that computer. And what I've noticed here with using it on the Mac, and what's really exciting for me is, you know, I run a consulting business. So now when people call me up, like Michael was saying, and like, hey, how do I fix this problem with this app? And they're on Windows. I'm like, I have no idea, man. I ain't looked at Windows in, you know, almost 5 years. I have no idea what it looks like. What I'm able to do now, because as I'm sure that all of us here now know, you know, we oftentimes can't tell people directly how to do a thing. We have to go do it first, because we learn by poking around and stumbling around and, yep, and stuff. Sometimes we just try to make it look more professional. So that is going to be a huge gain for us. And the fact that it goes across from Mac to Windows, Windows to Mac, Mac to Mac, Windows to Windows is also a huge game changer for any of us, whether you want to do what Stephen wants to do, which is, you know, travel around the world and still control his Mac Mini from on the go, or if, yep, you're trying to remotely, you know, support people and actually do a job and get paid for doing that. It really changes the playing field. And again, it is surprising in a lot of ways that nobody else has attempted to really solve this problem for us.
One of the nice things about RIM, and then I'll stop talking about my super excitement about this, is if Steven wanted to, he could connect his account to the Mac Mini. And once you become a paying customer, which I believe it starts at $9.99 US a month, once you become a paying customer, you can actually save that computer. And so it's always available. So when you have the Lenovo and your remote, you can log into your account and see Steven's Mac Mini and remote into it without having to touch the Mac Mini. So you can remote control a computer. And I mentioned this, I think it was on Double Tap, it might have been a different show, where this would have been super convenient to have when I was working for the company that owned the radio stations in our local market, because a lot of times I was permitted or I was prevented from being able to do remotes independently because I couldn't remote into the on-air computer and take actions. If I was at the on-air computer, I could. And now with something like RIM, I could just sign in to the RIM account that the on-air computer is associated with, click on or press enter on air computer, and then all of a sudden on my remote on site, I'm controlling the computer that's back in the studio.
Yeah, I could have really done with that during the pandemic. Yep. During lockdown, yep. That would have been really useful.
Isn't that how, what's it called now? Google Desktop works?
Where you Chrome Remote Desktop, yeah.
Yes, that's the one, Chrome Remote.
That was the closest I could get to, actually. I did use that, actually, most of the time, because that was the one I could connect to from my Mac. And the great thing was, because the keyboard shortcuts were different, and I was connecting to a server running Narrator, so it wasn't brilliant. And it was a really old server edition, and it was running Narrator, but I could still get to what I needed to get to, which was good, actually. That was the only benefit of it.
Can I just say Michael is being incredibly mean there by not giving out that keyboard shortcut? I get it. It may change in the beta, not beta. But whenever I've used these remote access apps, I usually spend the first 20 minutes trying to find that keyboard shortcut because I'm stuck in someone else's system.
So Sean, let me make it easier for you, because it may change on Mac, but on Windows, it's Control-Shift-Backslash.
Ah, there you go. Thank you. Beautiful. Yep. Control shift. And you mentioned there it is a subscribe service, yeah? Subscription service.
So they have an interesting plan. You can subscribe monthly if you want to, and that gives you a set of features. Or if you're like, you know, I'm not going to do this every day, but I'd like to have like a bundle of minutes. Sound familiar? You can go ahead and purchase a couple of hours of minute of usage, and those stay on your account for a year, and you can use those whenever you want. And then they also offer incident passes, which means it'll work for 24 hours, and then after that 24 hours, you have to purchase another pass.
Okay. Wow. That's an interesting model. That's quite cool.
Yeah, that's good, actually. Yeah, good. And obviously, this is built for businesses, isn't it? It's built for organizations. It's built for what you're talking about, people who, in the role of actually providing support. And you know, I think the great thing about this, and I think this is something that a lot of people might take back to their managers. I think, you know, people listening to this who are working in this mm-hmm. kind of field, thinking, hey, this would actually make my job a million times easier. And actually, not only that, provide the opportunity for people to get into work. Now, I must say, you know, we're talking about the Mac side of this here. That's the new bit. But like you say, RIM has actually been around for a while. So, you know, on the Windows platform. So, you know, it's maybe important that most people may be aware of it in that field. But if not, what a great opportunity to learn about the system.
But has it always had the NVDA built-in feature? Or is that new?
So it's always had the ability. And for a while, I don't kind of know what happened like in the mid teens, you know, like 2014 through maybe 2019 or something. Like I don't know if it was still actively being developed then, but I do remember it from, you know, the early 2000s using it. It's always had the ability on Windows, if I connected, and I would do this, like I actually had a server set up where I would just send people a short link and say, hey, go here, download this, install this on your computer for me. And then I could just connect to their computer, whether they were a screen reader user or not, and I was able to control their computer. So it's always had some form of built-in screen reader access for connecting to a computer that was not running a screen reader.
That is so cool. That is so forward thinking.
And as Steven pointed out, like, I really think, how many people do you know? Like, you know, us here, but people listening, like, how many people do you know that are really good with computers, that can figure stuff out, mm-hmm. they're great at helping, and the one thing that stops them from getting a job is that, you know, you have to provide remote support for someone else, right? And we've always been cut out of that, especially on the Mac side. Now, Windows, you know, it's been there. Again, I don't know if it's always been there throughout 2015, et cetera. But, you know, this, as Steven said, this opens up the possibility for someone to get a job. And think about it nowadays, people are more comfortable, or I'll say companies, corporations are more comfortable with people working from home. So, you know, get a job as a computer support person or help desk person for a corporation. And, you know, it improves the lives of everybody, and it gets you employed.
The less eloquent way to say that is winner, winner, chicken dinner. Right, listen, we're geeking out today about Mac stuff. And
so Scottish.
It's always about chicken and food, usually fried. But listen, I want to talk about Backblaze, which is an app that essentially allows you to back up on your Mac. And Michael has done a very cool demo for us. Here it is.
Today, I'm going to show you how to set up Backblaze, a backup solution that Demasi recommends. And I've heard of and used a time or two myself, but I also don't have any backups, and I lost some important files when I decided to delete 92 gigabytes of data out of my downloads folder. I am also going to use this backup hard drive that I have, too, because, yeah, More to come on that in the future. I'm going to start by hitting right option S to open Safari.
Safari, untitled window, smart search field, displaying alternate items.
And you can take out this URL if this is being published to your publication and you don't want Demasi to get credit. Or if you're listening and you don't want to give Demasi credit, then look for Backblaze. Otherwise, type in yourownpay.com, yourownpay.com/backups with an S, and we'll hit enter.
/backups. dbackup.html number f9ytg. Cloud.
It redirects you to a page with the title of
Cloud Backup. Easy. Secure online backup. Backblaze.
And so we'll use heading navigation.
World's easiest cloud backup. Backblaze Unlimited Backup. Get peace of mind knowing your files are backed up securely in the cloud. Backup your Mac, Linux, or PC, Linux, for just $7/month. Sign up for a 15-day free trial. Email, blank, edit text
and
email
that's
field.
For the email address, so I'll enter in
insertion
my
at end of text.
Email address.
Password.
And it asks for a password. I will get a password from 1Password. When we're done getting the details from 1Password, we'll hit Command S.
Save item. Search in all accounts. Blank.
Quit this.
Safari. Cloud back. Region. Password. Paste.
Put in my password.
Sign up now.
And choose sign up now by pressing VO right arrow.
Do you want to allow downloads on www.backblaze.com?
And we're prompted, asked if we want to allow downloads. Well, we need to download the Backblaze client, so we'll choose
allow.
And press
cloud backup.
Space.
Easy. Secure online backup. Backblaze. Download has started.
And now the download has started and the download is done. So what we'll do is open Finder.
Finder.
Press Command Option L.
Downloads. List. One item selected. Install underscore Backblaze underscore D12 and 999,278D063C14DMG.
And that's what I want. So I'll press Command O to open that.
Open. Backblaze installer. Window. Icon view.
And we're put into an icon view, so we'll interact.
Backblaze installer.
And that's what I want, is Backblaze installer. We'll press Command O.
Open. Application. Alert system dialog. Backblaze installer is an app downloaded from the internet. Are you sure you want to open it?
And then I'll press VO right arrow twice.
This. Open. Finder.
And
Backblaze application.
That.
Alert system dialog. Backblaze installer would like to access files in your desktop folder. Help.
Now you're going to get these prompts, quite a few of them, because macOS requires you to allow applications access to specific folders inside of your home directory. So yes, I want Backblaze to have access to my desktop.
Okay. Don't allow Backblaze installer. Okay. Alert. System dialog. Backblaze installer would like to access files in your downloads folder.
Now it's asking me for downloads permission. I'll give it that.
Okay. Finder. Backblaze installer window. Backblaze installer. Backblaze installer. Backblaze installer window. By clicking less than install now greater than, you agree to the license agreement at the URL below. Link. HTTP.
And I agree to their license agreement, so I'll choose VO end.
Install now.
And press VO space.
Password application. System dialog. Backblaze installer.
I'm prompted for my system password.
Backblaze installer not responding.
And then we're going to wait a couple of moments while
Backblaze installer, login items, background items added, software from Backblaze added items that can run in the background. You can manage this in login item settings.
That's a macOS feature, macOS alert that I can help you clear in a moment.
Backblaze installer, analyzing drive. This may take a few minutes and will only occur once. Progress indicator, Zinstaller BG dark, window. You can close the preference panel anytime. It will not affect your backup.
So we'll let it analyze, and I'll go show you how to dismiss this alert. Press VOO.
Notification center. Window. Notifications.
Interact with notifications.
Login items. Background items added.
VO command space.
Actions menu. Three items.
And then
close. Close login item. Reminders. Stacked. Reminders. Review. And a start full disk access at 2x. Open applications folder and system preferences. Finder. Applications window. Column view. One item selected. Backblaze. Systems. System settings. Full disk access window.
I command tab to system settings and then used VO right arrow to get
full
to
disk access. In full add. Remove. List. In Backblaze. Off switch.
And we'll turn Backblaze on.
On. Password application.
I got a prompt on my watch, so I'll double click the side button on my watch.
Full disk access window.
Taken care of.
Backblaze. On switch.
So then I'll quit system settings.
Finder. Applications with Backblaze installer. Backblaze and a start full disk access. Close.
And then we'll hit close on full disk access.
Backblaze. Backblaze window. Pause backup. Has keyboard focus.
Now we'll go VO home.
Selected. Michael at payon.media.
So it already had me signed in. I didn't have to sign into anything because the installer was customized to me. Pressing Command Q on the Backblaze window will allow you to quit the window. And if you want to check the status of your Backblaze backup,
Safari, backup,
access your status menu.
Menu, status menus, SMENU.
Choose this menu option.
SMENU menu.
And then press VO down.
Backblaze preferences ellipsis. Remaining files. 37,331 files / 96,921 MB.
So just a few files then. Okay. wow. That's absolutely fantastic and a great example of how to get that up and running on your Mac. Listen, guys, we're almost out of time, but we've got to do this again. This was really interesting. You guys are just so knowledgeable about this. And I think, you know, the way you bring it across to people is really important as well, because we can all geek out in our own time. But, you know, it's trying to bring other people with us on this to say, hey, look, here's the possibilities of this kind of software like LaunchBar, like Remote Incident Manager, like Hazel, you know, like Backblaze. These are all great applications and they can really further your enjoyment. And, you know, there are lots of things even built into the system you can do, like text replacement, which I still think is one of the greatest things that the Mac has, you know, for just simple ways of, you know, long screens of text. Like, for example, when I write my show notes every day, you know, if you want to contact the show, email feedback@doubletaponair.com. I can put all that into text replacement and just have three characters that, you know, define that. So there's lots of things you can do with the Mac. And, you know, it's definitely worth checking all those out. We'll put some links in there as well so you can go find these apps. And also we'll put links to the podcasts. But Michael, first off, tell people where we can get you, because you're about 8,000 podcasts, aren't you?
Yeah, the best way to find 8,001 now, you know, yes. Got to launch a new one in the near future. Now, go to your own pay, yourownpay.com. That's where you can find all the podcasts that I am involved in. And Steven, you need Text Expander, because then you could have one shortcut and then it'll say, what show is this for? And put all the contact details for each show.
Oh, you see, there you go.
Been schooled again. Unbelievable.
Love it.
Dropping knowledge bombs. Well done. Fantastic.
Demasi, from you, technically working, but you're doing lots of other stuff, right?
I do lots of other stuff, but probably the best place to keep up with me is just follow the podcast, Technically Working, because we're technically working, I tend to talk about whatever I should be doing, even if I didn't do it on that show. And I don't check Twitter anymore, so I won't give that information out. And I'm right here with Steven. I'm not really sure I understand Mastodon. So yeah, just hit Technically Working. Look for it in your favorite podcast app, or as Michael said, you can go to yourownpay.com/TW, which gets you to Technically Working. And I appreciate you guys having me.
Oh, listen, anytime. And, you know, I think the Mastodon thing, I kind of want to figure it out, because I think there's clearly a thriving community over there. I'm not saying I'd ever move over to it, you know, lock, stock and barrel. I think I'd want to stay on other platforms as well. But I think ultimately, knowing about it and being on there would be good. And there must be some great Mac apps on the go as well.
Mona's in Test Fight, just saying.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Mona. That's from the people that made Spring for Twitter, right?
Yep. It is. Yeah. Yep. It is.
Interesting.
Which is how I got introduced to your show, is because Michael was like, you should really check out Spring. And he's like, have you listened to this Double Tap show? And then I went and listened to it. And the first episode I caught was you guys talking about Spring.
There you go.
It's karma.
It is Michael karma. Said, and you stayed
have you
with
listened
us
to
despite
this
all
show?
That. Yeah, how did he say that exactly?
Yeah, what was the tone?
Listen to this show? listen, guys, thank you so much. As always, Michael, great to have you on. And Demasi, great to have you on for the first time. Really, you know, just brilliant. Come back again soon. Sean, thank you for whatever it is you do. And
you're welcome.
We're back again tomorrow, same time. Talking CSUN tomorrow. We'll review CSUN. JJ Meadow joining us for a full review of what's been happening. It's been a busy week. He'll give us all the details that coming up. Keep your feedback coming, of course, feedback@doubletaponair.com. Call us on our listener line, 1-877-803-4567. We'll catch you tomorrow. Cheers, guys.
Love Double Tap? Did you know we're on the TV too? Check out brand new episodes of Double Tap TV on AMI TV every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, or binge on all episodes online at ami.ca/DoubleTap. We're also on YouTube. Search for Double Tap to catch our episodes there too.
Hello, I'm Sean Preece. Join me monthly for Sean of the Shed, where I introduce you to all the technology that could be so useful to us as blind or partially sighted people. Find Sean of the Shed wherever you find all your podcasts.